bringing you the real insights from science tech startups. Learn from experienced founders and experts how to build a successful startup. You are listening to the Working with Startups from Science podcast with your host, Bartosz Kaidas.
Hello and welcome to this brand new episode of Working with Startups from Science. This time in English. In today's episode, we are setting sail into the captivating world of innovation, collaboration, and the power of ecosystems. My interview guest is the amazing Michael Mangold, a chemist turned corporate innovator and a visionary in orchestrating change through networks. Michael's journey is very inspiring. From his experiences in a digital health accelerator and a biotech incubator in the heart of San Francisco, he has gained unique insights into the vibrant startup culture of Silicon Valley. He wrote basically also a book about his insights called Building Networks. A must read, of course. But Michael is not just an observer. He has embraced the role of a catalyst for change, dedicated to shattering the limitations of traditional mindsets. His mission is clear and compelling: to foster collaboration, nurture networks, and inspire a new generation of changemakers. In this episode, we'll dive into Michael's favorite topics and talk about the question, where is the best place in the world for science tech startups to start their business? So fasten your seatbelts and prepare to be inspired as we dive deep into the world of science tech with Mike Mangold. Don't forget to subscribe and like this podcast. Let the journey begin. So here we go. Hi, welcome on stage, Michael.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, nice to be here. It's so nice that you are here in my podcast. We met already in Berlin and had some exchange via mail. And our meeting in Berlin was so inspiring. And I thought you have so much knowledge about this ecosystem topic. And I thought we need to meet here in our my podcast. And now I'm very happy that we are together. In this old year, it's not that, it's a year that will be over. But yeah, nice that you are here.
Pleasure that the topic of ecosystem is of rising interest and looking forward to talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah, so very great. If we start, like, if someone doesn't know you, right, how would you describe yourself, or how would you introduce yourself to someone who doesn't know you?
Yeah, I'm happy to make an intro. Well, first of all, what I usually start to talk is about my background. You know, I'm a chemist by training, and, you know, usually in a business world that resonates because you don't have that many chemists trying to build companies or build collaborations. And then after I introduce myself by saying I'm a chemist, I usually tell that I've been around in different places in ecosystems such as Silicon Valley. I've been in Zurich, next to the ATH. And then I moved to Düsseldorf, I would say lower ranked ecosystem. And after that, Berlin. And basically, my passion transfers from science to collaboration. And how you basically change the world or solve the world's biggest problem with the help of deep tech, you know, science and technology. And then after that, people and collaboration.
Mm-hmm. So how do you pick that topic? So what was your personal motivation behind that?
You know, journey has been interesting. I think you don't know what you don't know. And that's why I'm a big advocate of changing your environment to discover who you are. A big advocate as well that, you know, people impacting the world are the one that are self-aware. So to build that self-awareness and to really find my passion/purpose, well, it really by mistake and a lot of serendipity, which by definition is you just go somewhere and then by magic you meet someone and then they make you interact with a topic you've never encountered before. And the fact that I moved around, you know, I grew up in France in a small village, then moved to a city a little bit bigger called Mulhouse, and then to Freiburg to the binational degree, And then, you know, I traveled the world as well. And, you know, today over 45 countries, backpack, two bricks. And, you know, people underestimate what's outside of your CV. It's, you know, who you meet in the evening. It's who do you have a phone call with you never put on paper. But usually these conversations are the one that actually guiding you towards a topic you may really stick to and be passionate about.
Mm-hmm. So did you have such a conversation in the past that it was like so inspiring that you thought like, yeah, this startup thing could be a topic for me?
Well, you know, I never thought I would be an entrepreneur. Actually, that's something that you hear a lot of podcasts, successful entrepreneurs. They say, I was 13, I was selling cards and making money. Yeah. I sold my first game. Exactly. Well, for me, it was never like that, to be honest. I grew up in a, as I said, a village, and then I studied in a very academic environment. And around me, there was absolutely no one that was talking about business. My parents, you know, my mom was a hotel manager, my father was a chef. So building a startup was out of any discussions we had when I grew up. It really started when I started to be set by the length and the, I would say, lack of energy in research lab, in my opinion. I was doing different, you know, research internship in different labs in Freiburg. And I started to be frustrated by how things were running and also by our focus on just science, but not enough on people and working. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I was trying to travel the world and then you meet very different people with different ambition, completely different background, from artists trying to, you know, sell a piece of art to entrepreneurs investing their money, or even digital nomads doing marketing and digital media from Bali. And meeting these people always inspired me about the aspect of freedom. Number one, I wanted to be free. And, you know, when you're in a lab, you kind of stick to a lab. And then second, I knew that I wanted to be more with people. And that initial motivation to just try out outside the lab and then the industry, particularly to go out of a really academic environment, was appealing to me. But I think the epiphany really was when I was doing my thesis in, you know, Dubendorf Empire. It's close to Zurich. It's a lab from the ETH between the, you know, academia and the industry. And there, a lot of our discussion was about patents, and I was reading a lot of patents, and I was listening to talks about spin-outs. And while I was listening, it started to really understand even the concept of, you know, basically transferring your science to a company. Before that, really wasn't part of my language. So that was when I was 25 years old. And after that, I realized that I wanted to go to Silicon Valley because of that birthplace of entrepreneurship, basically.
Yeah, that's cool. Because, I mean, for me, it's not that clear when you are a chemist that you are thinking about startup topics, right? Because chemists are usually like set up to a lab, or I don't know, they are working, they are stationary. There is no digital nomad style or something like that. That's very exotic, right? These thoughts about entrepreneurship from a chemist point of view.
You know, and what I want to add to that is people refer to entrepreneurs today as, you know, launching Uber, Airbnb, Apple, Microsoft, and everybody understands these examples because they became extremely successful. But if you look at the history of time, that was the first internet company that ended up being very successful. And, you know, in 20 years from now, maybe the most successful entrepreneurs will be science CEOs. As the time and the interest of people and society is different today. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, why do you believe that?
Well, because if you look, so internet obviously came in the 2000 and you had an explosion of problem to solve on the internet, right? How do you connect people? That was Facebook. How do you, you know, research information? That was Google. How do you, you know, rent a taxi in 28, which was basically Uber? How do you, you know, go on vacation for cheaper and also make money while you're away? Well, that was Airbnb, and on and on and on. But it was really because you provided a platform to people so they can basically sell goods or rent or whatsoever. And I think that's also coming to certain kind of saturation, of problem to solve, and you have established player as well. Even if you still have a lot of AI companies, and that will always go on, but I think now there is a huge interest towards sustainability, especially because climate change is a topic. To be honest, in 20 years, no one was really talking about it. And now you see it almost every day in the news that we have to do something about it. And then governmental and politically, you get funds from, you know, $1 billion fund in France, $1 billion funds in Germany, Europe leading the way, and the COP, calling for out of fossil phase, which is absolutely, you know, almost imaginable 10 years ago, that was the topic that would come today. And because of that, you need science to solve this problem. I mean, it's not really internet that is going to solve it. So that's why I believe there will be a wave of scientific entrepreneurs coming in 10, 20 years.
Yeah, I think that also, right? Because that's groundbreaking, what's coming from science, but needs the adjustments, right? There is no product market fit already when you're talking about science products. So this is, I guess, another challenge of these topics. But I think that, yeah, this is like the internet, basically, right? It was developed in CERN from Tim Berners-Lee. And this was a thing that was basically just internal stuff. And now we are using it every day, every second, basically. So yeah, I see that too. So you as a chemist, you went at some point to Silicon Valley. And how was that for you? Do you had some expectations about Silicon Valley? Did you heard about that area? And was it like everyone is dreaming about that? Like, boom, mind blowing.
Well, to put things in context, I think everybody's experience in Silicon Valley is different. And I did talk to a lot of people who've been there, and we really had different experiences. So I will talk about mine, and that's important that people have to know about it. So the first thing that people have to be aware about my profile is it was 2019. And before I went there, believe me or not, people were talking to me about shareholder, stakeholder. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know. And I remember at an interview, I was an email, and I was then Googling what is all the terms that I was receiving for email. and that was kind of my level of understanding of business. I didn't know what was a VC. And I was already 20, five, basically, which actually I almost can't believe that happened to me. But that was my profile. So I went there with really a total beginner mindset about business. I mean, really a really beginner. And I was very lucky because not only I had a company that welcomed me really well, and, you know, it was Bayer Pharmaceutical, and I must be honest, I had the best onboarding of my life. Basically boss, which became a mentor and a friend and much more, Rama Penta, was being incredible. He took an hour every day for the first 3 weeks of my, work, internship, and explained everything about the industry, about the pharma industry, how it works, digital health, regulations, different, business concept, which I had really absolutely no idea about. And so I was able to get a lot of help from the start, and also an encouragement that I was here to learn. I was here to experience Silicon Valley. Like, they really took that into account that, I was here for Silicon Valley more than I was here for Bayer, and they wanted to help me. And that was already the first huge difference if you compare to any other place, is people usually say, you're here for me. You're here to do the work they really knew.
You have to do my work.
Exactly. And that was already a big difference, right? So you're here to get better, and we want to make you a better person. That was the first intention of my team. And obviously that empowers the individual, because you know that why you're here, and you want to do good work because of that mentality. So that was the first experience. And then if I sum it up, after a year, I've been now in Berlin for 2 years. Way more happened in 1 year in Silicon Valley than 2 years in Berlin. And my network, I think it's at least 10x what I have in Berlin in 2 years. And that happened for seven different reasons, six different reasons. Well, exactly. Number one.
I would just want to introduce, and these secrets are part of your book, right? So
exactly.
Audiences who want to read They can like go on Amazon and order your book.
You know, to talk about the surface.
But we want to have the seven insights maybe briefly described, so it's very interesting.
Well, I can basically briefly mention what is in the book. So in the book, you know, my book is called Today's Superpower: Building Networks, Seven Mindset and Principles to Thrive in a Fast Changing World. What I'm saying in this book is the time that we are transitioning to, which is from the shareholder economy to the stakeholder economy. And that...
What does that mean?
Well, the first thing that people have to understand is that before, everything we were doing was to please shareholders, means the people that invested in your company. Mm-hmm. So you take business decision, cut costs, buy cheap material because you had to make profit. In the future, businesses will have to report not just to shareholders, but to customers, to their suppliers. They have to track where the material comes from. They will have a carbon footprint. They will have all these different elements, which means it's not just shareholders that you have to please, it's the stakeholders around your business. And that's the first massive shift that we're going to. The second shift is that, we live in a world which is exponential. And that wasn't the case 100 years ago. So no one has the ability to innovate by alone or itself. So companies are forced to collaborate, right? And based on that concept, where I have these two really principles, I take the example of Silicon Valley, how they innovate and why is it so different than everyone else. So I talk in one chapter about six differences that they are doing different. And then I talk about seven mindset principles to build an ecosystem around yourself and to build an ecosystem around your company, basically to create change, innovate, and create a positive impact.
Amazing. How did you like? Do you adapt these insights, or where does it come from? Did you observe the differences between the ecosystems, or how did you took that or distillate that insights from your experiences?
No. Happy to share. Well, that insight came along the way. When I started to write a book, which was basically during COVID, I sat down and I thought I want to write a book about innovation from science. This was really my original idea. And I started to sit and I started to write and I started to consider what is innovation. And I started to do interviews. I did 22 interviews. Half of my interviews were coming from people Silicon Valley because, you know, this is where it comes from, right? And then I took example of Boston because I work with a woman that led the transformation of Boston, leading a $1 billion fund. And with this insight coming together, I realized, okay, it's about building ecosystem, and that's massively inspired by Silicon Valley, right? And one of them, which I like to cite, is the give first mentality, right? So a massive difference, to take a concrete example, is you go to an event in Silicon Valley, meetup that you found free, you know, allow everybody can go. So the difference is there you go. First of all, it's most my experience is that it was inclusive. You can just go. You don't need to pay. Usually companies sponsor the event. And you don't only meet entrepreneurs, the real entrepreneurs right now raising money. They're pitching, and you have serious investor in the room. And then when you tell what you do, everybody wants to help you. Whereas in Germany, where everybody's looking for exclusive events, if you go to a meetup that is free of charge, you have entrepreneurs, which is great, but you won't meet usually the successful entrepreneurs and the investor and tada, because they're hiding somewhere. And they're not here to help the community. So that's two massive difference. And so that's why I'm citing examples like that. Give first mentality, thinking bigger, thinking long-term, you know, explaining the why, being bold. All of these elements are really inspired by Silicon Valley. And this is what creates Silicon Valley. And, you know, when COVID started, everybody thought Silicon Valley would be dead. 90% left San Francisco. 90,000 people left San Francisco, which is almost 10% of the population. It's a small city. Mm-hmm. And again, they're again at the top of the innovation curve with all the, generative AI. Again, Silicon Valley. So it is, there is something there. And these principles, you can find it across different books. So these principles in my book are the one that I experienced based on what I saw in people, what I saw in research, secondary research, primary interviews, and my own experiences.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this is a cultural thing, like European mindset versus American mindset, or where is the root or the cause of that thinking, like with your example with these events?
Yeah. Well, there's really a few factors that are taking into account when we look at entrepreneurship. Well, first of all, U.S. is an opportunistic country, right? I mean, everybody that moved here back in 100 years ago, they all wanted to build a business. So the people already are very driven towards making money, right? And actually, we have to remind that entrepreneurship, you know, if you Google it, some definition is it's an engine to make money. And that's something some Europeans, they forget to think about. But second, you have a lot of events that attracted a large amount of diverse groups towards San Francisco and Silicon Valley. You know, you had the Golden Rush, and then you had all the wars, you know, the Cold War, and people escaping different region, and on. And so from these different events, now you have had a mixture of hippie, you had a mixture of, you know, Asian population due to all the war in Asia, and then European that were escaping the war in Europe. Plus the Golden Rush, where the entire world tried to dig gold in the 850. And then basically with all that complexity of population in the 60s, you really had people that realized, what if we will build a company with pot money? And you know, we basically, venture capitalist was born. And that was, I think, Fairchild Semiconductor, which was basically the first one. And he was the kind of the creator of Silicon Valley, because they spun out 50 to 60 companies. And when they saw that model was working, everybody followed. And you had the very early success stories, which built you know, other successful stories. And I think that's what we're lacking in Europe. We don't have these huge successes yet. And we are still a very immature ecosystem, right? It's 70 years versus maybe 10 years in Europe. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that. I mean, there are different actions of people, the federal state, institutions who wants to foster that kind of ecosystem in different regions. So Berlin, Munich, and other universities or cities where universities are. And yeah, it's a little bit challenging, because it feels quite not authentic, right? If you want to paste the Silicon Valley style or mindset in our European mindset. So what is your recommendation? How can we set up good ecosystems here in Europe?
Yeah. Well, there's a few differences other than the mindset. You know, so the first of all, the one we already talked to finish the topic of mindset, right? So they think way bigger. They raise more money. They pay the people more. And I have the example right now. I may join a startup. Instead of raising 500K, they're raising 10 million. And then they pay salaries of 200,000 to every of their first employees. And that's already a huge difference when you think about it. I just don't see that in Europe. They think bigger. They think bold. And they are way more ambitious about building global businesses, compared to a lot of Europeans that think quite local. And I think that's a big problem. They think also way long-term and towards exit. And we all know it's way easier in the US compared to here, as we have the complexity of markets. But I think another major difference is private money versus public money. You know, we have to look again at the exact number, but I think less than 20% in the US is public money to fund startup. I think almost 40% in Europe is public money. And another study, which I like to cite, that study, 136 Berkeley startup from you know, coming out of the Berkeley accelerator, they looked at what made the successful and what not. And what they found out is it wasn't the amount of money that made them successful. It wasn't the years of experience of the team combined, which a lot of people cite sometime here. It was who invested the money. Who was the investor? Did they have a good relationship with the founder? And was this investor able to open doors for the company? And if you get money from the government, usually they won't really help. And that's already a huge problem with all the companies having exit grant. The money is not smart money, as we call it, right? It's just money. So that's already a huge difference. The second thing they discover is that it's about how are they going to work with the ecosystem, right? So as I said, it's a very connected ecosystem. So they have access to, you know, accelerators, resources, IP support. They're going to have access to maybe law support. They're going to have access to design support. They're going to tech support, hardware, whatever. They just like, and they just cross the street. They have it. Over, I think, 50%, and I actually have the statistics right now, so I'm not saying a mistake. We have it here. It's over, yeah, we have it here. Only 28% of European startups have their company in a super hub. You know, it's like Paris, Berlin, London. Over almost 50% of all US companies, startups, are in these super hubs. And, you know, people, even if we are in this remote world now, you know, underestimate actually how amazing that is to be in a hub, because you get access to all the resources on demand, but also because of pure luck and serendipity. As I mentioned, you just go somewhere and you found out. And that's kind of, you know, major differences with the how you found companies. And then obviously talents, right? They do have, because of the maturity of the ecosystem, access to a lot of serial entrepreneurs, people that know how to build companies. You know, in Europe, I mean, it's very rare to find people that have already built companies. I mean, it is, you know, 1 in 100, right? And what I'm saying on building a company is successful, you know, an exit, an IPO, or potentially grow the company to a certain level. You know, you basically don't have any of these talents. So it's very hard to attract them. And if you do, you know, it's really a lot of luck. Whereas in the US, you have an abundance of these talents.
I mean, this was a perfect mention or example with this funding quote and the percentage and founding out from a hub. And like when we're coming back to the first question, so where I need or want or should I start or my business, right, as a science tech? So what would be your recommendation with your experience if there are listeners who are like thinking founding in next year a company? What should they do?
Well, first of all, I think we can start with the basic of building a business is what is the problem you're trying to solve? And then where is this problem in the world? You know, number one, you know, if you build solar panels, you know, you have to look where in the world is it the best to build solar panels to make a lot of substantial amount of money. How big is your business in this market versus how big is the business in another market? If you look at the circular system for fishes, I know from my experience that all Saudi Arabia is very interested because they cannot, you know, fish, you know, farm and so on there. So there is a higher chance of success in Saudi Arabia or Middle East, whereas in Europe, for instance, if you build a business that is shrimp farming, we know that you know, the entire aquaculture industry almost is in Asia, right? So you have to consider how can you bring, you know, increase your ties with Asian companies, because they will be your customer. They will be potentially who gonna make you grow your business. And then if you build an EV or a charging station whatsoever, European is your market because of regulation. So that's the number one. So where is your biggest market, and where would you like to scale? And once you identify, you can start to pick. And after that, you need to obviously focus on your industry and your vertical. As I mentioned, if you're in charging station, which is the biggest hub in Europe, right? Because if you build another business, which can be nuclear power stations or another business, let's say, you know, cleaning the water pipes or whatsoever, will be different cities and you have different initiative. And actually in Europe, especially, businesses are heavily driven by regulation. So which country will help you the most for that specific innovation? And that basically, it's a personalized answer. But now if we look at average, you know, numbers, this is what I like to remind, because, so I've been in Berlin, I've seen how the ecosystem here, the amount of startup coming out of Berlin is still 10 times less than the amount of startup coming out of San Francisco for a city which is 4 to 5 times smaller. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine that, you know, if you scale San Francisco to Berlin, we're talking potentially at an intensity of 50 times more. So we still have a small ecosystem at the end of the day, but, you know, big for Germany. London is number 3 in the world. Berlin is ranked right now number 11 or 12 in the world. Paris was equal to Berlin for a long time, but right now is gaining advantage, especially with AI companies, quantum companies. And with the regulations happening in France, the startup ecosystem, which gets a lot of visibility from the government, and that helps. So it's a moving metric who is getting better, improving. And based on an industry vertical target market, you can pick your right location.
So, okay. So I have two questions regarding to that. So I got that methodology. So this is great. Looking for your markets in the world, right? In which, what are the best circumstances for founding your company? What my question would be, like, scientists often tell me, like, oh, Bartosz, we are so new, we have a patent, we are very innovative, there is no market established yet. So what should we do? And what could you recommend to them?
Yeah, well, what I mean by market is, so they have a technology, they should still have a feeling where the technology will be sold the most, right? And based on that, they can evaluate approximately, even if it's a new market. I mean, we all know that, for instance, cloud analytics for batteries is kind of new because you don't really have it yet, right? That can do all the power grid, you know, connected to cars. That's a market that doesn't exist, but they still should have a feeling. After that, really, when you're starting, so let's take the example of a university researcher having some kind of transferable science and doesn't know where to go. In my opinion, if it's a first-time founder, I would really join an accelerator. You have dozens, if not hundreds in Europe. And I will apply to many of them, you know, going from the best ones, Techstars, Y Combinator. You have Mass Challenge in Switzerland. You have a few new ones coming up. You know, CDL, I like to cite. And then other and other, right? I would just apply to these accelerators, from the best accelerators to maybe the 50th best. If you get the best one, just go there, right? They will invite you to the city and so on. You know, you have Techstars Sustainability. You have a deep tech now in Berlin. And Basel, for instance, is best for biotech, in my opinion. In healthcare, you know, UK is actually way more advanced than Europe. So you really apply to this initiative. You apply where you get the money, and then you follow your first traction, right, in a way. You know, I learned that from a successful entrepreneur. He's built 15 startups and sold 7. And he built a new one now, which I'm right now working with. And basically, their whole strategy is based who is buying the solution. They could do a lot of things. But they found a customer, he want to invest $2 million. So the first product now, it would be specifically for that customer. So listen to the market, listen who wants you. And you have to talk to a lot of organizations, to a lot of, you know, already interacting B2B clients. And based on the answer, you can see where you could move first.
Okay. So the second step, if I now decide where to go, for instance, a new country, and I don't have any connection, what should I do as a founder to create my own network?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of ways to create a network. The first one is you can obviously do that online. And that's why for that, you can really do it from anywhere. It's fantastic. There is, I would say, something that very few are talking about. But, you know, with networking, for instance, on LinkedIn is incredible. There is so many, you know, personally, I've been at least on 500 calls from people I've never met before, purely from LinkedIn. And I did that, you know, in the last 5 years. These connections, which are organized very easily, very fast, can give you a ton of insights. And I want to also remind everybody that the people that will help you the most for your business are what we call weak ties. Big connection is not your friend, is not your family, is the brothers of the cousin of your friend. that's demonstrated by a study from, you know, MIT that did together with Harvard on LinkedIn and so on, that weak ties are stronger than strong ties, and happy to share the research. So you need to interact with anyone you can think about that is kind of connected to you, but not really. And then you need to have the ability to ask questions, you know, to go ahead and always provide, if you can, help or at least offer help to these connections. And then you need to track these connections. You have connections on LinkedIn, or you can track them on a CRM online. I'm a big fan of HubSpot, for instance. And go to events, do this online. And then what I always say, be a creator, not a consumer. So when you share outside what you do, what you want, what you're trying to get, what you're trying to achieve, usually people will help you. Crowdfunding campaign for small projects are incredible. You know, you get early customers, and these people get your early adopters. You can enroll them for your product. When it's a bit more, deep tech and B2B, obviously you cannot do that. But share what you do, expose who you are, try to connect, build a brand online, offline, to event, try to pitch, go to hackathons. There's really a lot of ways you can join communities. There are plenty of them in every big hub. And slowly you will see that it will grow organically.
Oh, perfect. That sounds amazing. So I can imagine that if I want to establish a new company in a new country, so I would do the same. Maybe typing in the name of the city via LinkedIn and then searching some interesting people and reach out to them, right?
Actually, if we can be more specific, I give you an example. I think that's something that can be great to someone, let's say, who does know Berlin. And then I would say Basel. You have now in almost every city, especially in Europe, what we call backbone organizations. I also call them support organization. In Berlin is Berlin Partner. In Basel is Basel Innovation. And you can go to this organization. There's 250 people working for Berlin Partner. It's a lot of people. So you will have help. And you just contact these people and say, I'm looking for X. And I always say, don't say I want everything, whatever. If the more specific entrepreneurs are with the question, the easiest it will be to get that answer. And usually, if you can be specific, I need access to investor, I need access to a CTO, and they will say, well, go to events at Motion Lab, which is a hardware company, or go to Mercantex, right, this AI campus. There you find them. I need access to how to build a company. Well, go to a venture studio. There can be many in the city as well. And when you know what you need, and that's why you have to do a gap analysis of your business or yourself, what are you lacking? What are you good at? What do you need? When you do that, from a financial perspective to operational, to a team perspective, to a technology perspective, then you know where to go and what to ask. And then you just go there, ask the question, and people will redirect you.
Perfect. Very, very cool. So we will take that. Last question to you, Michael. What is your master key tip that you can give us for our audience?
I would say people should stop being afraid of not sharing the idea. Especially in Europe, a lot of people said, oh yeah, it's my idea, I cannot share it, or I need an NDA or whatsoever. I think this is the biggest mistake most Europeans do, most entrepreneurs do. We live in a world where your idea is going to change 100 times by the time of the launch. And the worst thing you can do is hiding it. Because if you hide, you won't find collaborators. You will usually have a lot of bias about why it should work. And when you tell your idea, people will tell you why it won't work or what you can do different. And share your idea, spread it, talk about it, even if you believe there's competition. Competition is good. Competition will help you to be successful.
Very cool. So, Michael, thank you very much for all your insights. It was quite interesting. And yeah, I'm really looking forward. How will your journey, your personal journey, will extend or maybe scale? Yeah, so I'm very looking forward to it. Have a nice Christmas, good start into the new year, and hopefully we can see and chat once again, and you can give us an update here in this podcast. Thank you very much, Michael.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Bartosz. See you next year.
Bye.